first went into keeping, I gradually got round to see the different keepers next door sort of thing and join, and we used to, the hunt used to put on a supper for us keepers, and our stop was once a year at Bocken, who used to get to know the different ones there, and that's where I got to know Joe Miles at Finchinville. Oh, Joe came there in the 30s, and he was there well over 40 years. He never did rear a pheasant all the time he was there. It was all wild birds. So he used to keep his vermin down, very tight, very good conscientious bloke he was. But for some reason or other, we got on a treat. A lot of the neighbouring keepers, he didn't have a lot to do with. But Joe and me got on a treat for some reason. And he'd tell me anything, really, because he knew it wouldn't go any further. I wouldn't say, oh, Joe Miles told me this, Joe Miles told me that. He averaged, in the 40 seasons or more that he was at Spain's Hall, he averaged 1,000 a year and never did rear one. He used to say to me, he'd have 3 cock days in January. One, the family would have the first Saturday and the second Saturday. The tenants would have the third Saturday. And Joe got promoted so he could have a couple of days at the end. He used to say, you mark my word, Dick Boy, I shall kill 500 cops in January. And I noticed for several seasons he would pass the 500 mark. I don't know how ever he got friendly with, but he got friendly. He used to get friendly. There'd be a different face roll up each year on his cop day. He got friendly with a bloke from Kent, a fishmonger. I don't know whether his name was Hubert or Rupert, but this Joe was artful. This fishmonger used to roll up with a great big haddock for Joe and his wife. Oh, that'd go in the fridge. That'd go in the fridge, all right, Joe would say. Then he got friendly with a chap who was a proprietor of a hotel, the Pier Hotel in Southend, a bloke named Alexander Smith. And I don't think Alexander Smith had ever handled a gun before, but Joe said, I met an old boy, he said, got a hotel in Southend, he said. He's coming shooting. He said, I want you to stand next to him, Dick Boy, will you? I said, yeah. I said, is he all right? And, oh, yeah, he said, him's be all right. He said, but he don't hit nothing. He said, I don't think he's been shooting before. He said, he don't hit nothing. He said, so anything going over him, he said, you take it after. He said, but let him have a shot first. I said, all right, well, up we rolled on this day when Alexander Smith was going to come. And there he come in his brown, great big brown boots, his stockings, +4s, a Harris tweed suit, all brand new, a new leather cartridge belt, a new leather cartridge bag, a new gun sling, and a new side-by-side hammerless gun. He'd obviously been out and bought the whole lot. A little pork pie hat with some feathers in. And Joe was right, he couldn't hit a thing. But he would always bring a hamper with him, a wicker hamper from the hotel for his lunch. And always on those days, we'd used sometimes go to the Tons at Finchinfield or Green Man in Finchinfield halfway up the hill. And sometimes Cornshall End Horse and Groom. I can remember Joe would always forget his lunch. Oh, damn me, my missus, I forgot to get my lunch. Oh, don't worry, Miles, he'd say. Don't worry, Joe, I've got plenty in my hamper. And he'd open this wicker basket and Joe's eyes would lift up. It'd be a great big whole frozen, whole cooked chicken in brown, lovely brown, straight off the spit that'd come out. He'd pull Joe off a leg and a lovely bit of crusty bread and Joe used to wink at one eye. Oh, thank you, Alec. I'm glad I'm sitting near you. We shot. He said, Dick, you want to watch out this afternoon. He said, you've got the King stand down new cover. He said, Alec's on the corner. He said, and I'll put your peg, he said, just on his right. He said, you'll be able to reach him, he said, after he's missed him. Anyway, they done the drive. I think I finished up with 11 cock slam between the two of us. And when we finished, Alec said, that's a nice bit of shooting, Dick. I said, thank you, Alec. Do you mind if I pick some up? I said, help yourself. So he said, can I pick 4 up? I said, pick 6 if you like. So he got three in each hand. He went walking up to Joe. Joe said, "Well done, you, Alec. Did you shoot all them?" Alec looked at me and I winked. He said, "Yeah, of course I did." "Well done, you," he said. "Well done." He said, "Oh, you got tickets for?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "He knocked them down like clockwork." "Well done, Alec. He played though, Alec." Of course, out come a damn bound note for Joe in the back of his hand. He said, "Love that." And this bloke, this fishmonger, he bought a new dog train. And he got on the whistle. And of course, that's the first time he took the dog out, and the dog never knew him. He bought it, I forget what he paid for it, about £90. And, of course, one of the two of us keepers has got a whistle in a pocket, and we kept playing our whistles, and the poor dog didn't know where the hell to go. "Come on, Rupert," he kept on. That's it, his dog was Rupert, he was Hubert. "Come on, Rupert," he kept on. "Come on, Rupert." And anyway, we had a great laugh with him. Joe came and looked at my pheasants one year at Peppers. I was taking him round for a ride, and I said, "Come and look at my birds, Joe." The cock birds were showing their colours, but I used to have a hatch come off every week for about 5 weeks. I used to go out and buy 30 or 40 broody hens if I could, every Tuesday and Wednesday. But I'd have 600, I used to try and put 600 eggs down every week. And you wanted over 30 hens to cover them, because some hens you bought, they wouldn't stay broody long enough, or they would get frightened when you took them off and put them on a bit of string to feed. So Joe come up and looked. "Cool," he said, "they be good birds, aren't they?" I said, "Yeah, they're good," he said. He said, "Sir John would like to see them." I said, "Well," I said, "if Sir John like to come," I said, "he can, I'd be pleased to show him round." He said, "I'll have a word with him." He said, "I'll give you a ring." I went a couple of days and Joe rang up one night. He said, "I've seen Sir John. He'd love to come and look at your birds." He said, "Can he come Sunday?" I said, "When? What time?" He said, "Well, whatever time suit you." So I said, "Well, make it about 7 Sunday evening, will you?" Joe said, "Yeah." He said, "Where have I got to come?" I said, "Well, you come to the farm where the birds are." I said, "I'll meet you there." He said, "All right. See you about 7. I said, "Yeah, you can come a quarter 7 if you like." He said, "Well, I'll see what Sir John said and let you know." The phone went the next dinner time, and that was Joe. He said, "I've seen Sir John." He said, "He'll be up there about 7:15 on Sunday evening." I said, "All right, Joe." So I thought, I'd better tell Mr. Whitlock, I reckon. So I went down the office and went down the yard, the works the next day, and he was sitting in the office, and I put my hand up, and he noticed, so I went in, and I said, "You coming up Peppers the weekend, sir?" He said, "No, I don't think so. Why?" "Oh," I said, "I just wondered if you was coming." "No," he said, "no, certainly not. Not time to come yet," he said. He said, "Hey, yeah, what do you want to know for?" And I said, "I got the Lord Lieutenant coming to have a look at my birds on Sunday evening." He said, "You have you?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Who arranged all this?" I said, "Well, Joe Miles came and looked, and he thought Sir John would like to look round him," and I said, and Sir John said, "Yes," and I said, "We've made an appointment for Sunday evening about 7:15. So he sat and thought it over, and he said, "Well, I suppose I ought to come up there and meet him, don't I?" I said, "Well, I thought that's what I'd come to see you about." I said, "I thought that'd be a good opportunity for you." I said, "I didn't want to tell you Sir John had been and looked and you didn't know." So he picked the phone up. "No," he said, "I don't know whether we ought to have him for supper." So I said, "Well, it's up to you, sir." So I said, "He's going to bring Joe Miles with him. Joe's going to show him where to come." So he picked the phone up and he rung his wife and he said, "Nancy, we got anything on Sunday evening?" So she must have said no. He said, "Dick has got the Lord Lieutenant come to look at his birds Sunday evening." He said, "I wonder if he ought to invite Sir John back to supper." So she must have said yes. And he looked up, he said, "Will Dolly be prepared to come down and give Mrs. Whitlock a hand, Dick?" I said, "Yes, sir. Yes, of course you will." He said, "All right," he said, "I'll confirm it with Sir John," he said, "tonight over the phone, and come and see me tomorrow, see what arrangements we make." I said, "All right, sir." So I went back the next afternoon, and he said, I rung Sir John last night. He'd be very pleased to stay for supper. He said, so what I thought you could do is, he said, you come down the Grove, leave your old van out the way, hide it up. He said, ride up to Barnes Farm with where your birds are with me and the Rolls. He said, and after they had a look round, he said, you and old Miles drag your feet. He said, and you drive Miles back in my Rolls. He said, and I'll come back with Sir John in his. He said, you can go for a drink and do what you like for a couple of hours. So I said, all right, sir. And I suddenly thought, I don't know, it ain't going to work very well, I don't reckon. Anyway, I spoke it over, talked it over with Dolly that night. And she said, oh, Sir John, the first thing he'll say to Miles, have you had any supper, Miles? And he'll say, no, sir. She said, being out with you a couple of hours, it'll be three sheets and a wind. So I went down again the next day to Carlton. I said, me and Dolly were talking it over last night, sir. I said, what about Miles? He said, what about him? I said, well, Sir John, think a lot of old Miles, you know. I said, the first thing he's going to say to him when he gets in the Rolls after, when they go back after he's had his supper, have you had anything to eat, Miles? And I said, Miles, had one or two drinks, you'll say no, sir. I said, I really think you ought to invite Miles and myself to supper as well. I said, not with you, I said, but in the morning room. Picked up the phone again and rung Nancy. He said, Dick, think him and Miles ought to come to supper as well in the morning room. So she obviously said, well, yeah, what a good idea. So she said, Dolly, he said, that's right. He said, well, Dolly can have hers with you then while we're finishing ours. I said, all right. So he said, that's all arranged. I said, yes, sir. So on the Sunday evening, I went up with Carlton. We got there first and partly, I said, turn your Rolls round the right way so I'm ready to come out. I don't want to be shunting that about amongst these farm buildings. So he turned around properly. And then Sir John rolled in with his Rolls with the flag of the Lord Lieutenant on the front, flying on the front. So we had a look round and called Miles, look at them birds, he said. Look at them cockbirds, Miles. And Joe said, that's a cock here, Sir John. Anyway, I looked all round them and Sir John said, Dick, I think they look very, very well. So as we made our way up the meadow, I said to Joe, don't be in a hurry, Joe. And Joe said, them's getting in front of us. I said, it don't matter. And when we got to the farmyard, they'd already gone. Joe said, damn it, they're gone. I said, I know. I said, I'll drive you home in the governor's. So I opened the door of the Rolls for him. And he got in, shut the door and went round. The driver Rolls, I don't know if he dare let me ever tell you the truth. So we come out on the main road to Edingham. I thought, oh no, I'll take them to Bottle Hall. A little old pub stuck out the way where Fred Garwood and them all get. So we turned up to High Street Green and pulled in the front of the Bottle Hall and the curtains all went one side. I heard afterwards they said, oh, how many the landlady and lady went in? Many, you got a Rolls Royce just drew up in the car park. I said, whoever the hell is it? Don't know. She said, we all got to the window, peered out, and all of a sudden somebody said, well, that's Ruggles driving that car. He said, down for you and that old Joe Miles out as well. So in we went, we had a couple of pints, and off we went. We come out and went off back to Yeldon. We put the Rolls in the garage, and I thought, we're too early yet. But Dolly said, Nancy Whitlock, I said to Dolly, tell Dick and him to come about up past 8 to 9. This was only sort of 8 o'clock time. So I said, come on, Joe, we're going along the wagon and horses now. And we had a couple of small bottles in the wagon and horses. Went back to the Grove and Dolly took us in the morning room. She said, I just sat down. He said, you'll be another quarter of an hour. And we finally, Dolly brought the food in. A nice big thick rump steak each. New broad beans, new peas, new carrots. Straight out the garden, the guard had already got in. That was lovely. Joe said, I can't work all this. I said, I'm going to take my jacket off to her. I took my coat off and finished it up. Dolly sat and had hers with us as well. And then the whiskey bottle, Nancy brought the whiskey bottle in and a couple of free tumblers. She said to Dolly, get them some water. She said, tell them to help themselves. Nice bottle of Johnny Walker Red Label. Joe's eyebrows kept looking. He said, this be all right, ain't it? And finally the word comes through from Dolly, Mr. Sir John will be ready in 5 minutes. I said, come on, Joe. So I took Joe out through the garage and opened Sir John's door of the rolls and put Joe in, and had Sir John come. He said, thank you, Dick, very much for showing us around. I said, that's all right, Sir John, it'd be my pleasure. And he shoved his hand in his pocket, give me a couple of pounds. He said, apparently he said to Miles, you and I ought to give Ruggles a tip. He said, I should think so, Sir John. Give me a couple of pounds. He went out the gate. Joe said, when they got the Spains all back, he said, I thought he was going to drop me at my house. Instead of that, he pulled in the garage of Spain's Hall, and he said, Miles, he said, I want a little walk. He said, I'm full up. Joe said, so be I, Sir John. He said, well, we'll walk down the back lane to Bumpster Lodge. He said, and you can walk home from there. He said, it'll do me good to have a walk. He said, we walked all the way down to Bumpster Lodge. He said, and he kept fetching the wind up all the way down. He said, I'm full as a tub, Miles. He said, so be I, Sir John. He said, what'd you have? He said, we had the same as you, according to Dolly, Dick's wife. We had rump steak the same as you and all the new vegetables. Now that was a nice little evening up there was with Sir John. Joe got invitation to speak to the health, the ladies section of the round table, I think it was called, yeah. And they had their annual dinner. And they were all out up the High Street. They got a big function room up the top. I don't think it was about 20 of them, something like that. Joe told me afterwards. He said they'd be good old girls they were, he said. They laughed, he said, and he said, finally they introduced me as Lord Lieutenant of Essex Keeper. He said, I got up and he said, thank you very much for the meal. I've very enjoyed it very much indeed. He said, but I'd be a moonraker. Do you know what a moonraker is? He said, no, nobody spoke. He said, come on, he said. Somebody must know what a moonraker is. Only nobody, somebody said, no, we don't know what a moonraker is. He said, well, a moonraker is a bloke was born in Wiltshire. And you suppose you've all heard about the old man from Devizes? He said, because my home is in Devizes. And I suppose you've all heard about the old man from Devizes. He said, so one of them at the back said, no, tell us. He said, well, he had two. He said, both different sizes. He said, them's laughed, he said. And when they finished, he said, I said, any questions? He said, and somebody said, what do you think the young girls of today walk about with miniskirts? A lot different to your day when they had dresses that went right down to their ankles. What do you think of that? Joe said, all I can say is, he said, it's easier to get at. Wow, Joe. He got invited for somehow or other to appear on Anglia television. And we all knew that was coming off, the day what was coming off and what time and so on. And up he went to Norwich and he took a cock pheasant with him in his hair pocket. And they had a dress rehearsal. He said, I had a bit of stuff make me up. He said, all in a little short skirt. He said, you never seen nothing like it. He said, she painted my eyebrows, he said, and she put rouge on my face, brushed my hair, and he said, made a rare trade. He said, we had a dress rehearsal. He said, and this interviewer, he did say who he was. we went through it all, he said. And he said, I understand you've brought a pheasant to show me, Joe said, I have, sir. And I took this cock pheasant out of my hair pocket. He said, now what is it? He said, that'd be an old English ring, that. That was a nice, they had lots of them about Spain's Hall with a white ring round the neck. That was a very old breed, old English ring, that. Joe said, that'd be an old English ring, that. Oh, I see, he said, and I stroked the feathers and put it back in my pocket. Yeah, when it comes for the proper do, he said, that was on, before the red lights come, you're on television. He said, we went through it, he said, until I brought this pheasant out of my pocket. He said, in the interviewer jumped the gun a bit, he said. He said, now don't tell me, let me guess what it is. So he said, I stood there, I sat there stroking the feathers smooth. He said, that's an old English ring, that. Joe said, I thought, yeah. He said, that's where you be wrong. He said, that's a Spain's all high flyer. He told us all at times. That be a Spain's all high flyer. After he retired, he moved to a bungalow in Wethersfield. That was a private bungalow. I think his son out in the West Indies had bought it for him, and him and Mrs. Miles moved down. And I used to call round Saffron Gardens, the road. I used to call round and see him occasionally. And he'd be sitting down in an old shed he got there in the garden making snare pegs. He used to say, bring me a couple of bits of ash stick, about 9 inches long, he said, and I'll make you some snare pegs. So he used to sit there hours with an old chopping block and an old bill in his hand cutting these snare pegs. And I went once, Sir John told me he used to call and see him. He used to have his car serviced in Wethersfield. And occasionally, every periodically, he'd call and see Miles in the bungalow. And he said, he went once, he said, and I was game of fiver when I left. He said, and I went once, and he said, and I was going to come out the door, and he said, I don't suppose, Sir John, I should be here when you come again. He said, why is that, Miles? Well, he said, I don't think I shall last so long. Miles, he said, you've been saying that for 10 years. He said, and you're still here. He said, and I realised what he stopped me for. I hadn't given him the money. So he said, he handed him his wallet and took out a fiver. He said, I don't suppose, Sir John, I should live long enough to spend it. He said, you've been telling me that for 10 years. He said, but you're still here to do it. So I said, I'd have to call and see him. So I went round. It'd been 2 or 3 months since I'd been. And I went round one morning and Mrs. Miles came to the door. She said, come in. She said, he won't get up this morning. I said, won't he? She said, no. She said, there ain't nothing wrong with him. She said, he just got in his head. He ain't going to get up. He said, go down the passage. His bedroom door's on a jar. Go in. So I went and tapped the bedroom door. There he was, propped up in the pillars. Hello, Dick, the boy, he said. I said, hello, Joe. What are you doing in bed? I feel like a morning in bed, he said. I don't feel all that special. I said, you're all right, really, ain't you? He said, well, he said, I'm going to have a rest in bed this morning. So I stood at the foot of the bed, leaning on the foot of the bed, talking to him. And after about 10 minutes, he said, I expect you'd like a drop before you go, ain't you? So I said, well, it's about time you mentioned it. He said, tell the missus to get the bottle. So I opened the bedroom door, pulled the bedroom door open. I could see her down in the kitchen. I said, Mrs. Miles, she said, yeah. I said, he want the bottle. Oh, all right, she said. So I went about a few minutes and she came down. She said, can't you get out of bed, she said, and go to the toilet. He said, I want the damn whiskey bottle, woman. He said, what do you think I want? He said, I can go out and do a titty when I want one. He said, get the whiskey bottle. we've had the one in the pub, haven't we? He used to write poems after he retired at Wethersfield. And he now and again sent me a 2 or 3 come. But anyway, one I remember, I can remember one well at Trent. My dad could tell some stories about the countryside. And this one comes from Wiltshire, where once he did reside. Surrounding several acres, they put a fence and net, but underneath the gateway, old hares would always get. Now, good old country poachers are noted for their scents, and they soon took advantage of this wire net and fence. 2 would work at night time with no one else about, knowing that the old hares had only one way out. They'd spread a length of long net down below the gate, and one would walk a meadow while the other laid in wait. Came a great commotion to the walker's ear, language highly colourful, mixed with a sound of fear. Gotty Georgie hollered and waited for replying, which was more confusion, no bugger he got eye. He hurried to the gateway to see what could be done, and there he saw this damn great fox fast upon his bum. "Get him all this out of my arse, he's very sore," and he had to kill Bob Reynolds to open up his jaw. That's one of Joe's poems. That's good, isn't it? We shot once at Spain's Hall, partridges in September. It wasn't very often they had a partridge day in September. They would have a mixed day in October, but you could take a high pheasant or that sort of thing. But on this particular season, that was a good season, 1960-61, Sir John had a partridge day, barely in September. Carlton Whitlock was one of the guests, and he said to me, "Are you coming with me or are you picking up?" I said, "I'm going to do both. I'll come with you," and I could see, because you can't get too far back when you're partridge shooting, because you must probably the next drive up. So there we stopped. There we went on. I used to pick up Carlton spurs and keep an eye out if there was any runners and from the either gun or either side of them. So we got through. And there they finished up with 130-something brace. And that was a lot of partridges in that particular time, over 200 partridges in a day. And when we finished, we got back to Spain's Hall, Rad Butler was in the party, Ernie Doe's at Alton, you know, engineer firm, Cable Kerr from Ongar and different guns. And I was putting Carlton's, now before the last drive, he said, "How do you get on with Miles?" Because I mean, Carlton was new to Sir John and them. "How do you get on with Miles, Dick?" I said, "Get on very well, sir." He said, "Does he have any equipment from us?" You know, he meant like game farm equipment, pens and that. So I mean, Joe, well, no good saying yes he does, because Joe never reared anything, so they didn't want to say, "Well, he don't rear anything, says he don't have no pens or nothing." I said, "But he get his traps from us and get his snares from us." So I see. He said, "So you get all right with him?" I said, "Yeah, very good." He said, "Well, I'm going to give him a fiver. I don't care what the others do." I mean, that was unheard of him back in the 1960 time. He said, "I'm going to give him a fiver. I don't care what the others do." I said, "Yes, you do that, sir." And with that, he opened his wallet. He took a big white fiver out and folded it, put it in his waistcoat pocket. When we got back to Spain's Hall, I got his boot open, and putting his gun away, and I could see Rad Butler talking to Ernie Doe, and one or two of them got their heads together. And Ernie Doe come up to Carlton. He said, "Carlton, I've been talking to Rab." I mean, normally they gave the keeper a pound tip in those days. He said, "I've been talking to Rab." He said, "We think we ought to give Miles 30 bob. What do you think?" So Carlton said, "Please yourself, Ernie." He said, "I'm going to give him a fiver." "Oh dear," he said, "we all ought to be alike." So he said, "Well, that's up to you." He said, "I've never been on a 100 brace partridge day in my life before, and I don't suppose I shall again." He said, "And I'm going to give Miles a fiver. You and Mr. Butler do what you like." So I watched out the corner of my eye, watched Ernie Doe go back to Rad Butler, and they got their heads together again. And I was just buttoning the case up his gun, and I said, "Here he come again, sir." He said, "Carlton, we spoke it over with Rab again." He said, "We think they all ought to be the same. We think perhaps we could go up to £3 each." He said, "I've told you, Ernie, what I'm doing." He said, "It's up to you others. You please yourself." And we had to turn away and go back again. Eventually, Joe come up with, they used to give him a lease of partridges in those days, not a brace. You had three partridges in a lease. "Here you are, Mr. Whitlock," he said. "So thank you very much, Miles," he said. With that, he took his white fiver out of his waistcoat pocket, shoved it in the top of Joe's waistcoat pocket. Joe's eyebrows went up and down. "Thank you very much, sir," he said. And off he went. When I saw Joe a couple of days later, he said, "What do you think I got off old Whitlock?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "A damn great white fiver." He said, "I shan't spend that if I can help it." I said, "You will, Joe." I said, "When we come up the horse's room, we'll expect a drink out of that." Oh, he said, "You won't get a drink out of that, boy." And he kept harping about this white five and all of them. That was unheard of. So I thought, well, the others didn't give him one, don't he? He wouldn't keep on about this one. We went up there one night, Bill Drain ashore, all of myself. And Joe had bought the first round of drinks, and one of us had bought the second, the other one bought the third, and that was Joe's turn. Joe had the bright idea that wasn't going to be his turn if he could help it. He said, "Let's go, old man, see who'll buy the next round." And old Bill Drain kicked my foot, looked up in the ceiling, so I said, "All right, yeah, if you like it." So it's your turn, really. "Now, let's go, old man." So we tossed our coins up, put them on the counter, and me and Bill both lay heads. Damn, Joe ain't got a head. All heads. Tossed again. Joe got a tail. We both got heads. "Get your money out, Joe." So he no sooner, he was on whiskey then, no sooner he drunk his whiskey, so, "Let's go, old man," again. So I looked at Bill, we looked up again. We laid heads again the second time. And Joe got a tail. He said, "God damn it," he said, "that's my unlucky night tonight." I said, we keep at it long enough, Bill, we get even change an old wet lock fiver." And finally he had to get it out of his pocket and change it. He didn't go a lot on that. We done him for free drinks tonight. We said we will make him change his fiver. Yeah, some good old times with Joe. When I went to Pepper's first, there was an old boy who used to walk along the top road. He lived in an old house they called Glasscocks, on the Sibyl Edigham to Wethersfield Main Road. And I found out he's a retired farmer. His name was George Perry. He lived in this cottage with his wife and his brother-in-law. And I found out from different ones that he had a farm at Wethersfield, which belonged to Sir Fortescue Flannery. He was a tenant farmer of Sir Fortescue, I think. Sir Fortescue was Conservative MP, I think, for Malden at one time. Anyhow, one day I was going along the road with my van. I thought, there was old George walking up the road, so I pulled up and had a word with him. I said, "I've been George, and come and have a look at me pheasants." So he got in the van and we got talking. So after that, I used to pick him up quite often. In fact, I used to put a white flag in his hedge. Like I said, from all over the estate, if I saw this white flag, I knew he wanted me. So I used to call around and see George a lot. And I could tell him anything, and that never went any further. He used to say, I used to go around and look at me traps and snares first thing, before breakfast, then pick him up about 10 o'clock time. He said, "What you had this morning?" He used to say, "What you had this morning?" "Oh, I'll count this morning, George." He used to say, "That's gone to a good home." He used to say, "Everything I've killed a fox, that's gone to a good home." So he was telling me, I said, "How did you come to get the farm?" He took the farm in 1929 or 28. He said, "And when the first Michaelmas come round, he biked into Wethersfield to pay his rent." He said, "I knocked the back door of the big house. It was either Wethersfield Place or Wethersfield Manor." He knocked the back at the door of the big house and the maid come. So she said, "Yes, what can I do for you?" He said, "I want to see Sir Fortescue, please." She said, "Well, Sir Fortescue's having his breakfast." She said, "You like to wait in the morning room there?" She said, "I'll call you when he's ready." So she said, he said, "All right." So he said, "I went and sat in his little room." And eventually he said, the maid come and she said, "Sir Fortescue will see you now, Mr. Perry." So he said, "I was ushered into the old man's study," he called it. So he said, there he sat behind his big desk. He looked up, he said, "Morning, Mr. Perry." He said, "Morning, Sir Fortescue." So he looked, he said, "What can I do for you then, Mr. Perry?" So he said, "I've come to pay my rent, sir." He said, he looked at the calendar on his desk. "Oh, yes," he said, "it's Michaelmas, isn't it?" So he said, "Yeah." "So I've come to pay my rent." He said, well, I shan't see none of the others. George said, well, I can't help bet that. He said, I'll come to pay my own. He said, and with that, he said, I pushed the money. George did tell me what it was. And I can't remember. But he pushed it in cash. Not check, nothing. He pushed it in cash across the desk to the old supporters queue. He said, now that lady never touched it. He said, can you afford this, Mr. Perry? We say, well, I can afford or not, sir. He said, that's what we agreed the rent is going to be. He said, and that's what you got now. He said, well, I've been having a look round your farm a few weeks ago, he said, and I must say it's a big improvement since you've had it. He said, you've only had it a year. George said, well, I've done my best, he said, but I've still got a lot more to do. So he said, look, Mr. Perry, he said, for your honesty, he said, I think you ought to have half of it back again. He said, with that, he pushed half of it back towards me. And I thought, how many people would do that nowadays, would they? He said, I said, are you sure, sir? He said, yeah. He said, you no need to say anything to any of the others. He said, but that's just for your honesty and your hard work. He said, well, thank you very much, sir. He said, and I picked it up. He said, and I took it in my pocket. He said, good morning, sir. He said, good morning, Mr. Perry. See you again. He said, yeah. And then he said, one February morning, 1940, I don't know if 1940 or 41, he said his wife had gone to Brantley Market with some eggs. He said, and I finished my breakfast, and I come out in the yard, and there was a big black car pulled up. He said, they've got two blokes, he said, with a case in hand. He said, I walked across to them, and they said, you, Mr. Perry? He said, yes. And this is Peacock's farm? He said, yes. He said, so, well, I said, we got some bad news for you. George said, oh, dear, have you? Who died? I said, ain't nobody dead. Well, what's the bad news? They said, we've come to tell you that we're going to take your farm over. You've got 6 weeks in which to find somewhere to live and arrange a sale. George said, well, I've got some news for you. I said, I've got all my winter corn in. He said, so you can't do that. I said, oh, don't worry about your winter corn. The Perry, they said, it'll all be valued and all above board. He said, well, you want to take it over for anyhow? He said, we're going to build an aerodrome here, and your farm come right bang spank in the middle. He said, does the Fortescue know about this? He said, yes, the Fortescue. He said, he only heard last week about it. He said, but this is what you'll have to do, is find somewhere to live and then arrange for sale. And we want to take over in 6 weeks' time. Oh, he said, I couldn't make nothing out of that. He said, I spoke to somebody and I said, oh, George Ellison, building an undertaker on an empty cottage along the Weathersfield Road. Why don't you bike to Headingham and see him? So he said, I biked after dinner. He said, I had a bit of bread and cheese for dinner because the wife went back from Brantley. I biked down to Headingham and saw George Ellison and told him that what the bickering I was in. And he said, can I rent that empty cottage of yours? He said, yes, with pleasure. He said, if I want some help, same as sheen and thrashing time, he said, I hope you'll be able to give me a hand. George said, yes, I'll help if I can. He said, so I then got in touch with, I don't know who he said, about his sale, farm sale. And he used to tell me this, tell him he told me that. Tears used to run down his cheeks. He didn't know what was going to happen to his horses. He wasn't worried about his nothing else. He was worried he was going to buy his horses. Because in those days, George never called a farm so many acres. That was either a two horse, three horse, or four horse farm. That was the size they went by. He said, I thought, well, anybody buy them horses? That's got to be a three horse farm. I don't want to be separated if I can help it. Anyhow, we had the sale, and in 6 weeks he was back in that cottage. Now, I mean, cool, how long would they be talking about it nowadays? And the point is, he used to be a great asset to me. I could tell him anything. He never repeated it, nobody. I picked them up once or twice, and I used to walk up the wood and feed three different woods, and then come back a long way round. And then I'd get in, drive across the stubble to another wood. So I said one day to him, "Did you ever drive a tractor on the farm, George?" He said, "I did come to finish a little bit." I said, "Do you reckon you could drive my van across this field?" He said, "I don't see why not. Do you?" I said, "No, I don't think so." I said, "If I darn it off," I said, "and I get out my side," I said, "and you slide over in my seat, and I run round the back and get in your seat," I said, "then I'll show you what you got to do when you get to the other end." He said, "All right." He said, "You show me first." So I went across this double, and I said, "Now, when you get here, I want you to stop about here. Don't go through the gateway." I said, "I'll go through there when I come back, when I save me walking all that way around." He said, "All right." So I said, "All you got to do is stop, turn this key, look, switch it off, that'll stop." "Oh, all right." So back we went to where we started. Started off again in bop, low gear. Here I got, ran round the back and got in. He was getting over in his seat. I said, "You don't want to touch nothing. I'll go on its own. Just sit there with your feet. And all you got to do is steer it. Follow my track down the key." He said, "All right." So the next morning, we had a dummy run. Next morning I said, "Do you feel confident?" He said, "Yeah, I know what to do." Off I went with my bag and left them to it. When I come out the other end of the wood, there was the van all stopped there ready. I said, "You worked it all right, George?" "Yes, yes." He said, "Well, no trouble at all." I went 5 or 6 mornings like that. Lovely. Come out one morning, the van walked down. Thought, where the hell has he gone? I could see the gate was open, and you had to go along the top of a fur belt to get out on the other side meadow. I thought, I reckon he'd gone through there, and I went through. And there he was, the front of it up against a fir tree. So I thought, well, I won't make song and dance about it. So up the door, I said, "I wondered where you were." I said, "I looked for you, what the usual place." He said, "Well," he said, "I'll come up there." He said, "And you know," he said, I thought, "I'll go through the gateway. Look, Dick, there, I'll save him going through the gateway." He said, "And I got so flummoxed that I'd gone through the gate without hitting anything." He said, "I forgot what I've got to do to stop it." He said, "I thought, well, if I put it into that fir tree, I'm going to fend that fir tree." And only made a little dent in the bumper. Anyhow, when I left, I used to take him brace of pheasants every time we shot. And eventually his wife died. His old brother-in-law died, and George was left up there alone. We gave him our electric cooker, didn't we, Dolly? He ain't there. We gave him our electric cooker because he went on the electric farm. I bought it off old George Ellison, put him on electricity. And we made him buy electric kettle because he used to boil his kettle every morning with an old enamel one with twigs under the fire, you know. "Oh," he said, "this electric one's a lot easier." I said, "I've got a good cooker that Dolly is going to put out." I said, "There's nothing wrong with it, only her brother-in-law's got us the neon." So we took our creeder up there, and he used his cooker, and Mrs. Perry did for a long time. So eventually, he got so he couldn't look after himself. I used to bring him up a chestnut. My father cut his hair in the chestnut. He said, "You can deliver my beer, can't you?" I said, "Yeah." I show him one old cook to call in, he's half melted. So he used to have about 2 large bottles a week, that's all it was. And I said, "You don't want large bottles, George, because if you only drink half of it, you've got to try and put the top back on." I said, have half a dozen small ones instead of 3 large ones. "Oh yeah, you reckon those small bottles were a lot better." Anyhow, he eventually moved to Gosford to live with his sister. After we left the pub and I got over to Shaw Hall, I used to take my brace about a couple of 3 times a year. He lived in a little bungalow with his sister, and he's over 90 then. I said, "George, can you manage to pluck these, or do you want me to pluck them for you?" "If I ain't man enough to pluck them," he said, "I ain't man enough to eat them." So, all right then. Well, I come home one night, and the phone went, and that was a woman. She said she was Mr. Perry's niece. She said, I thought I ought to tell you. She said that he's had a bit of a stroke and fell down. He's in Alfred Hospital. I said, oh dear. He's over 90. So I said, oh dear. I said, I'll have to go and see him. So she said, that's what I thought I'd ring you for, Mr. Ruggles. I'm sure you'd like to see him. I said, yeah, I will. And you know how it is, you say these things and you don't do nothing about them, do you? I reckon that went 3 weeks. I come home one night, winter time, dark as hell. I said to Dolly, I said, someone seen the team tell me I got to go and see old Perry tonight. She said, we better make sure he's still in Elton Hospital. I rang up the hospital and I said, is Mr. Perry, you've still got George Perry with you? And this woman said, yes. I said, oh, I'll come and see him tonight. What time is visiting? She said, 7 till 8, but she said, are you a relative? I said, no, only a friend. So she said, well, I don't think you ought to come, she said. He hasn't known anybody for the last 2 days. She said, and he's very delirious. He don't know nobody, she said. I think it'll be a complete waste of time you coming. So I said, well, I still think I'll come. She said, well, that's up to you. So we went. Dark all night, anyhow, we got to Alfred Hospital and got in there and we found him, and there he was propped up in bed. He got this young niece right up against the head of his bed. So I said, I was Dick Ruggles. She said, he don't know nobody. I said, no, so the nurse said. He was rambling on about the price of eggs weren't very much and that sort of thing. And now in, when I went in, he'd soon have to knock on the head with that worn lion. He was well away. So anyhow, we sat there about 10 minutes, a quarter of an hour, and I said to Dolly, I said, we might as well go. I said to this niece, no point in staying here, is it? She said, no. She said, I shall stop till just before 8, and then I shall go home. I think she lived at Braintree. So we were going to take our leave. So I said, tell him, shake him. I said, tell him Dick the keeper's there. So she shook his hand. He stopped talking. She said, Uncle George. She said, Dick the keeper's here. Say, who? She said, Dick the keeper. So he glared down at me. He said, where the hell are you been? So I said, I know, George. I said, I meant to come, mate. I said, but I'm here now. So he said, you brought me the beer? I said, no, I haven't, but I soon won't get one. Dolly said, I'll go and see the matron. She said, I'll walk up the dog and get a pint. So she went and come back. She saw the matron. She said, no, the matron said, keep a glass of water. You don't know the difference. So he said, back and then he pushed his knee set away. I put my ear down to him. He said, have you sent any old cats to a good home lately? I said, oh, I mustn't tell you, George. And he cleared us right as ninepence. And we stopped there till 8. And we left him, Jerry, oh, you'll come again. I said, yeah. Oh, it's been lovely to see you. I said, and you, mate. I'll come again next time. I said, shall I leave it long this time? He said, all right. And we had a phone call next morning about 8 that Uncle George had passed away in the night. So I'm glad I went to see the poor old boy on his last legs. That marvellous little tale, that, isn't it?
Mm.
We went squirrel shooting it. Did you know of Joe Miles of Fincherfield? Well, with Joe got the bright idea. He was going to poke squirrels out the drays. He said, I'll get you and Jim Jordan to come and Bill Drain from Shaw Hall, keeper Shaw Hall. Jim Jordan kept a pub at Sam Warden, Railway Arms. He said, I shall carry the poles, I'll borrow the poles from the war egg. He said, Al Ridger will poke them. We'd never been on this job before, poking the drays with long poles, 6-foot poles, keep adding them on to one another. You go up, I think we got 48-foot high if we could. And we started off. Sometimes there were 5 squirrels in the dray. Bang, bang, bang. In here We had a lunch. We went down to Three Tons and had a lunch. Come back and carried on another wood. And old Joe kept picking everyone up we got, putting it in a great old postman's bag on his back. When we finished for the day, he shot them all out on the floor, and old Joe was, he always used to, if he had a feather in his hand, he'd always stroke the feathers, and he stroked all his old squirrel tails out straight, then he got his knife out, cut all the tails off, because I think he got a shilling each for tails in those days. And we got 78. Anyhow, after we cut all the tails off and got the tails in his bag, he said, chuck them in the ditch. So we kicked them in the ditch where we were. And then we raised the meat down the Fox that night for a drink. And we went down the Fox about 8 o'clock at night. I picked Joe up and took him down. We got in there and some Yanks come in, you see. Old Joe was always one for getting round the Yanks if he could to get a cigar off them. Anyhow, he said to one of them, we've been hunting today. They said, what have you been hunting, old chap? Been hunting squirrels. And another one was listening. He said, squirrels. He said, what have you done with them? They're lovely to eat. So his mate looked round. He said, are they? Oh, yeah. He said, the state, he did say what state he lived in. He said, we love grey squirrels. He said, how many? He said, how much do you want for them? So Joe said, well, I'll have to think. He said, I'll have all you got. How much do you want? Joe said, one and threepence each. I said, why the hell? He said, well, he did say a shilling, but you know, one and threepence. He said, all right, old chap, I'll have the lot. Joe's eyebrows kept going up and down. He said, I'll get them and bring them down here tomorrow at lunchtime. All right, the bloke said, yeah, please. Joe took them down. He went and got them out the ditch the next morning. Wiped the bloody fur dry, put them in his bag and took them down, sold this bloke 78 squirrels, one and threepence each. When we put him to the pub, I had to get up 3 references to produce, in coop, to produce to the police, you see. That's showing my good behaviour in one thing or another. And they said, who can we write to? I said, well, right. I said, Sir John Spangehall, his Lord Lieutenant of Essex, then. Baroness Plummer lived up Barrigal. I said, oh, my old Governor Roy Wetlock was up after Carlton to do it. Anyhow, said John, I rung him up and I said, you'll be hearing from the police. I took the liberty of saying you'll give me a reference. He said, of course I will, Dick, he said. Anyhow, it went a few weeks before they wrote for these references. So Sir John told me this himself. He met Miles in the bottom of the wood one morning. He said, did you know Dick was taking the public house at Thomasville, Miles? He said, yes, I knows all about it, Sir John. Oh, he said, I've heard this morning. He said, I promised to give him a reference. He said, and I've heard this morning they want the reference sent within the next few days. Do you reckon he'll make a good landlord? Joe said, I'll tell you one thing, Sir John, he said, if hims don't get the customers, hims will get rid of the beer, he said. Tell Sir John. Old Joe used to have me old Uncle Purse. And old Uncle Purse lived out in the wilds on towards Sanford. And he used to go stop for old Joe, what he called Stop Stanford Woodhorse. And he used to bike along the road, nearly 2 miles from where he lived. And he used to stand outside his wood from daylight till we come along to do it in the afternoon. So one day we're doing that side, and Joe said at lunchtime, take a bottle of beer for old Purse, will you, Dick? I said, yeah, where is he? He said, round Sanford Wood. He said, take me a bottle of beer. When you get there, he said, you can walk free with the walking guns. He said, tell him he can go home, boy. Oh, boy, been there since daylight. So I said, all right, Joe, I'll clear off now and he can go. When I got round there, there was a 2-time fork stood again in the hedge, an old army overcoat over the top, a scarf tied round the top, and a cap on the top of that. And I thought, well, bugger, that's Uncle Percy's hat. That's his own army overcoat. I was in there about 5 minutes, and round the corner he come on his bike, jacket flowing in the wind. So he stuttered like hell. Got off his bike, I said, where you been? He said, oh, I'm army to dinner. He said, I have. I said, oh, I said, what this is for? He said, don't you tell home, Miles. He said, oh, I went off about 11. He said, I was getting bloody cold. He said, I thought I'm going on the war. I said, don't say, here, here's your bottle of beer. You can clear off now, right? He said, and Joe never did know that he used to do that. Oh, yeah, life's good. Old Joe Miles told me, who was keeper of Spain's all for years, that he was biking round Cornishall End one night, and he bumped into Harry Choate, who lived at the bottom of Shorewell Drive. And he said, Harry, you've got the spring cabbage plants. So Harry said, yes. He said, can I have a score? So he said, yeah, hang on. He said, I'll go and pull them now. So Harry went down the garden and pulled Joe 20 spring cabbage plants, put a bit of paper around them and a bit of string around them, and Joe tied them on his handlebars. So he biked up to Cornishall End and thought, I'll have a pint at the groom before I go home. So he put his bike outside the horse and groom. And old Rose, the policeman, stood against the church wall the other side of the road, apparently waiting for a phone call, you know, make sure he was on point duty like. So Joe hollered to him, oh, evening, Mr. Rose, evening, keeper. So Joe went in the pub, and when he had a couple of pints, when he come out, it was dark, he got on his bike, biked home and put the bike in the shed. And Joe said, I came out the next morning. He said, I thought I'd put my spring cabbage plants in. Went to take them off my bike, they weren't there. He thought, well, blaster, somebody's pinched my spring cabbage plants. And he thought, I bet old Rose took them. He saw me pull up with them swinging on me handlebars. I bet old Rose pinched them. Joe told me this years. Anyhow, years later, I went in, bumped the line. Old Rose was long retired. I used to get in there every morning and have half a bitter and stand there with up at the bar with Vera and Alec Basham. And we used to talk. I went for music exam with Rose's daughter. So we got a little in common. Joan Dare taught his daughter and all. And we was in there talking one day about somebody had something pinched. And the penny dropped with me about Joe's spring cabbage plants. So I said, here, Mr. Rose, I've got a bone to pick of you. He looked at me over the top of his glasses. You knew old Joe Miles, didn't you? He said, yeah, I knew the old bee, he said. I said, you pinched his spring cabbage plants one night. He looked down at me. He said, how the hell do you know that? I said, you did though, didn't you? He said, yes, well, as a matter of fact, I did. He said, I thought, well, Joe got some spring cabbage plants there. I could deal with a score of spring cabbage plants. He says, I'll wait till he's safely got in the pub. I went over, he said, and untied him off his handlebars. He said, and I biked down with him. I put him in the next morning. He said, I thought, well, he'll miss them. He'll go back and get some more. He said, well, fat. He said, well, that's been 30 years ago. I said, well, that might be. I said, but we ain't forgot it. One morning, Alec Basham came out of the line and looked up and down the road and happened to look up on the church tower. The flag had gone. And up there, instead of the flag, was a pair of ladies' knickers. And he thought, who the hell put them up? And there she come round the corner with Eric Wheeler with his dog. He said, Eric, you had to look up the top of the tower? Cool. Hell, he said, who put them up there? I said, I don't know, just nosed them. He said, I'll let her go and take them down. I can't leave them up there. So Ali said, I've got a church key. He said, you don't want to go home for one. Take my key. So off he went, the part old Eric did, and climbed right up the top of the tower and took the knickers down and hoisted another flag up instead. That night when they went in the line to play darts, they'd got wrote up on the dartboard, if you want the knickers, they're down at the vicar's. 10 marks had been 10 miles of bit of road on. You want the niggers out down at the Vickers. Now, I think I'll deal about Eric Whale. Oh, no, he said to me one day, he said he'd been in road with the Essex Hunt. I said, oh, yeah, where'd they meet, Eric? He said, at Radwinter Plough. There's a big wood there near Radwinter Plough. He did tell me the name of the wood. Over 100 acres. He said, they're generally all morning in there, he said. I sat on my horse, he said, and the hounds got full cry. It was lovely, he said, listen to them. He said, batting my bloody choir on a Sunday morning, he said. Well, Eric, he's a nice old fellow, though, wasn't he? Yeah. If the hounds met up the village here, he'd come all the way from Bumstead, he'd hack here, he wouldn't have a horse box, he'd hack here on Bob, I think he called his old horse, and he'd have a pint before he started with the rest of them, and off he'd go, and he'd used to say, I'll be back before 2, have a bucket of water ready for me and a brush, and all right, Eric. I'd have a bucket of water standing outside near the chestnut tree, and he'd come back about 10 to 2, and he was trying to wash his horse down with his brush and hold it one hand. He kept saying, stand still, Bob, stand still, Bob. We got an old boy in there, he'd been a cowman all his life. I said, Fred, go out and hold his horse for him. So Fred went out, he said, give us a reins, Rector, he said, I'll hold it. There he come the wind, he give me 10 bob note. He said, give him a drink in here, well, one only two, because that was gone 2 o'clock. So I took a pint for Fred to hold the horse and 2 more. And eventually he come in, he said, I'll have a pint. He said, old Bob will dry going home. Thank you for the water. I said, all right. I said, here's your change. I said, and I never took a drink for myself. He said, I never asked you to. But that was Fred finally married again. He married a widow who'd had a pub in Garth Edicum. Her husband drowned himself in the bloody water butt. We all said she was enough to make him do that. Anyhow, Fred married her. And on their wedding day, they got married at the registry office at Braintree or Elstead, I don't know. They came back to Bottle Hall and they had a few drinks. And she and Fred Fred's house was about a mile from Bottle Hall. So they walked home to Fred's house and to have the dinner. And she was all dressed up with a nice black straw hat and nothing and other. Fred was in his best suit, they said. And she said, we'll see you tonight, we shall walk up tonight. They got a few friends coming in for drinks in the evening. So anyhow, they had the drinks and she got friendly with an old gypsy gal. And this old gypsy gal and this fresh new bride used to get a half bottle of gin from Minnie, sit out in the toilet and drink this bloody gin out in the lady's toilet. And when it come time to go home, she was very paralytic nearly. They'd got to walk home, and they'd got to go by a pond at Kentish Farm. On the way, damn me if she didn't fall in this pond. Well, Fred struggled in after as best he could. He's up to his knees nearly in mud. He got a hold of her, and her hat was a-floating in the pond, and the farmer, a young fella, lived in the farmhouse. John Day come home, and he heard Fred holler, John! He run round quick to the pond. He thought Fred had fell in. There was Fred nearly up to his waist in muddy water, holding his old girl head up with the head out the water. He said, John, give us a hand. So John, he said, wait a minute. He said, you hold it while I get me weltons on. John nipped in, put his weltons on, and come out, and they got the old girl out. So he said, Christ, she's wet through. Fred said, I know. He said, there's a bloody hat, look. He went and got a 2-time fork and got a hat. So John went and got his van out, put it on the backboard of the van, and they took her home like that drunk as hell. Anyhow, she finally, after about a year, left old Fred, went back to her own house at Withersfield. So she then sued old Fred for maintenance money. She left him on grounds of cruelty, so he had to pay so much a week. Of course, gradually, old Fred would get behind with his payment. He'd have to go to court again and make up the arrears. Thought he'd bring it round the other way down. Mm-hmm. He'd make up the arrears, you see. He came in the Chestnuts one Sunday night. He say, I've got to go to court again Tuesday. I said, have you? He said, yeah. I said, what are you buying again? He said, yeah. He said, bloody old woman want the money. He said, oh, sod, he said.
Don't swear.
He said, the first thing I'd done was to get her out of that pond that night. He said, if I don't know what I'd do now, I'd have shoved her in a bit further. He said, I'd have saved me a hell of a lot of money. Anyhow, he said, an old lady plumber will be chairman of the magistrates. I said, she ain't fresh, she's down in the West Indies. I said, you know who'll be chairman, don't you? I said, I'll be a bloke, Colonel Deacon, that live at Bumstead now. I said, he's ex-master Fox Harris, and Fred was a rare hunting supporter. He got his C-Sessions badge and everything. I said, I'll tell you what, you come up here, I said, tomorrow, and I said, I'll lend you my plus fours, my long stockings. I said, you got a nice pair of brown brogues, put them on with my jacket suit, your hunt badge on. I said, you go like that. I said, old Colonel Deacon, he'll take a fancy to you. I said, he'll bear with you, I reckon. Fred said, I can't do that. I said, of course you can. Dolly got me best suit all put in a plastic bag. Tell him what to do. And one thing, you know, off Fred went. He didn't come up the Tuesday night, court case. He come up the Wednesday with me, suit all in a bag. So he ordered his beer. He said, have one yourself. I said, how do things go? He said, I'll tell you what happened. He said, I'll put your suit on. He said, I had to go in the witness box, he said. Old Deacon looked over his glasses at me, he said. He said, and the clerk of the court read a letter out from the old woman, saying that she'd been unwell, that she had a little job, that being she'd been unwell, she'd lost his little job, therefore she wanted her maintenance money. He said, Colonel Deacon said, just a minute. He said, Mr. Garwood. So he said, I looked up and said, yes, sir. Did you realise your wife was unwell? He said, no, sir. He said, was she well the last time you saw her? Fred said, the last time I saw her, sir, he said she was pissed. He said, they all laughed round the courtroom. He said, the bloody clerk hit the table with his nail. Silence in court. He said, an old deacon had a word with a woman on his right and another man on his left. He said, they got their heads together and he finally said to the clerk, I don't think we need hear any more of this case. Mr. Garwood, he said, we're going to dismiss the case altogether. You've no need to pay any further maintenance to your wife. Thank you, sir, Fred said, and I come storming out of court. He said, that air suit done it. He was picking up with us down Charlie Warner's. I don't think I told you. A very cold day, and he got a hip flask out. It was an old-fashioned one in a bit of a leather case round a glass. I think it was glass. I don't know if that was stainless steel or not. But at the top, it's got a little cap on the top, like an old flask, a little aluminium cap. He said, let's have a spot. So he took this aluminium cap off and he gave me the cap, the hole empty. And he unscrewed the top of the bottle, this half bottle of whiskey. I don't think it was quite a half bottle, but anyhow, it held a lot. He filled my little hip flask. I want only a couple of thimblefuls. I said, cheers, Joe, and I dipped it all down in one swallow, like, and I handed him back the hip flask, but this aluminium cup, and I never let it go. So he went to take it, and I still held on to it. He said, you don't want another one, do you? I said, well, there won't much in there. So he popped it up again. He said, I've been good to you in my time. I said, yes, you have, Joe, and I've been good to you and all, mate. Cheers. The laugh he was. He was a laugh and a half. Eventually, Sir John went and saw him one, and he gave him another £5 note, and he gave Sir John exactly the same as he gave him every time. I don't suppose I shall live long enough to spend it. He didn't either. He died in the toilet the next morning. And when we had the funeral at Finchingfield, I mean the church with keepers and shooting people from all over the all over the county sort of come. And apparently he'd been a dying for a long time. And she'd given him a hymn book. There you are, she said, choose your own hymns. And he chose one that nobody knew. The organist had a job to struggle through playing a tune. Nobody in the congregation knew it, but we mumbled away the words and got through it all right, eventually. And when they buried him, right near the Green Man. Mrs. Miles told me afterwards, she said, I had him buried right down there. She said, he spent most of his time in the Green Man. I thought, you might as well be as near to it as you can get. So one I was more or less lowering him in the grave, to felt a touch on my elbow, and there was Sir John. He said, the old boy beat us at the finish, didn't he? I said, I don't know, Sir John. Whispered. Yes, he said, that him. He said, nobody knew it. I said, no, there wasn't. He said, I bet he was up there saying, them didn't know that one. I beat him, them didn't know that one. that was all right, that was. Thank you.